left side, one by one. Let's go.
Football season just started up again, and the weather has been perfect. Monday night in South Kansas City, Center High School's junior varsity team played their first game of the season against St. Pius X.
Hey, Isaiah, not bad, but you gotta keep your feet. You gotta keep your head back there.
Standard piece of equipment at any game anywhere in the country. Even this local JV matchup is a tool that was invented right here in Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. Later today, we'll be looking at a new movement taking root here in Kansas City, tiny houses. But first, that local invention and someone whose even newer idea might eventually replace it on football fields across America. That man is also from Kansas City. He's Mike Foster. He's the founder and inventor of Laser Down, and he's here to tell us all about it. Mike, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I appreciate having the opportunity to come on today.
Well, we're glad you're here. I think most people know the piece of equipment that we're talking about, even if they've never really thought much about it. Remind us, what is the down marker, the down box?
Well, since 1987, the current down marker system that has been used in NFL stadiums and stadiums across the country was invented, patented, and sold here in Kansas City. Jim Eggender was the original inventor. He used to own Jerry's Sports Shop. He since sold it and moved to Dallas, but it's been in use for almost 30 years.
And so by down marker, we're talking about the pole that someone stands at the line of scrimmage in football and holds to indicate this is where the play started.
That's correct. It marks where the ball is in play and how it advances, and then if it needs to come back due to a penalty or to be marked off, either backward or forward, depending upon the progress of the ball.
Now, I'm going to confess I have a conflict of interest, because when I was in seventh grade at Allen Junior High School in Puyallup, Washington, I was the guy who held this down marker, and I think it was the one that you're talking about Mr. Eggender's technology replaced. The one where you had to flip the number up over the top from second down to third down.
Yes, there's been, in over 100 years, there's only been three systems used. I'll go back to the Newt Rockne days.
Yeah.
And they actually had a cube, four-sided cube with 1, 2, 3, 4 marked on it. And so they just spun it to denote. Then what you're talking about was the flip chart, 1, 2, 3, 4 with the heavy metal. And then finally, Jim, again in 1987, he used the slide system that's in existence being used right now that I hope to replace.
And sort of help us picture this. I think we're so conscious of it just being there on the sideline, we don't ever think about it. How does the slide system, the current technology, work?
It just actually has a lever, and it just changes as you go down. It has a catch, so 1, 2, 3, or 4, depending upon where you slide it to, shows. Jim got the idea from a swim meet, and he just simply kind of replicated it into this technology, made it safer, made it better, and the NFL adopted it.
I do remember that that flip chart, sometimes they were made of metal, and they had sharp edges, and you didn't want to be next to it when players started heading your way.
No, or in a lightning storm either. Mm. That was
good thought.
Yeah, that was another problem with it.
Okay, so this technology seems to have served pretty well that Jim Eggender here in Kansas City invented. Why did there need to be a change?
Well, it goes back. I was a football coach for 30 years. I was 4 years in high school, 23 in college, my last three professionally in the Arena Football League. And on every staff that I was on, it was a continual frustration to determine the exact distance. The down was easy. Everybody could see that, but the distance, because all play calls are predicated upon what that distance is. And whether I was a defensive coordinator, I was a guy spotting for the coordinator, but the first thing a coordinator wanted to know, or the play caller, was what down or what the distance is to go. And depending upon your perspective, a coach on a sideline, player on the field, fan in the stands, a guy that's in the press box like a coach may be, it's going to be different because of your angle. And so there's never in the history of football been an exact distance system, and that was the idea that I wanted to be able to convey. And so it would have down as well as distance.
So you invented Laser Down, which we should mention is spelled unusually, L-A-Z-S-E-R.
Yes.
And so tell us about it. How does it work? What is it?
Well, it like I said, it gives instant, precise, and objective information. What is different is on one end of the pole, it has a laser system. It is triggered once the ball is spotted by the official. the down box man will set it. The man on the pole, the box man, stick man, I should say, hits a button that measures the distance in a laser. It comes back, and then that is digitally displayed on another readout on the other end. And so now you have the down, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then whatever the distance may be. You know, it goes up to 99 yards.
And so are you envisioning some sort of digital display that will show the yards to go as well as the down right there on the stick?
Yes, it does. It uses e-ink technology. And so e-ink is what your computer screen looks like. And so it's going to have no moving parts. It's going to be internal, the electronics, but there are no moving parts like the system now. Because one of the problems with the dial-a-down, and I'm not speaking out of school here, is that with moving parts, it's just going to wear out, and they break the slats and everything. So I wanted something that had no moving parts. So yes, you will have a digital display that'll look just like your computer screen. And so you get a readout with those two numbers, the down 1 through 4, and then the distance, whatever that happens to be. And also down below, it will either say yard, feet, or inch. So you know what the increment is.
So, and it makes a difference whether it's 6 inches to go or 2 feet to go, which play you might call.
Yes, it does, because every coach, you're going to have, and I'll go coach speak here for just a second, but you're going to have what they call a long one, a medium one, and a short one when you get inside of a yard. And so there's three different categories for each one of those calls. And so it's that precise.
I guess I'm wondering, I think about how a laser beam works, and it has to be aimed fairly precisely at something. So would that be difficult for the person holding the stick to point the laser beam in exactly the right direction?
Well, that's why I have Artifact, a Kansas City-based company. Steve Pope is the lead engineer there. They're working on that. But no, they've figured a way where it can diffuse, and instead of coming out in a single beam, it comes out horizontally where it has a wider scope, and it's able to pick that up, and so it doesn't have to be as precise.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how this process of going from an idea in your head of what something that would be helpful to actually coming up with a product. You are not a person who has a lot of experience designing things with laser beams, I'm gathering.
No. Unfortunately, I worked on it for 3 years by myself, figured out I wasn't an engineer, and
took you a couple of years to figure that out.
Yeah, okay. I did. Yeah, I stayed at Holiday Inn Express, but you know, one of those kind of deals.
Sure.
But I went to the Blue Valley CAPS program, the Center for Applied Professional Studies, and I worked with them, and they were tremendous to work with. They helped me build my early prototypes, get my provisional patent and those type of things. And so I went to some experts, and I kept just getting pushed through doors.
And so then what happens? You finally develop some technology that allows you to do something different. Then what?
Well, as I said, I went as far as I could with the CAPS program for 2.5 years, and those kids are the brightest of the bright. They work with real-life mentors like Garmin and Bushnell here in Kansas City Market. And when we went as far as we could, we got the provisional patent, and they introduced me to Jim Baxendale, that is with a program here in Kansas City called Whiteboard to Boardroom. And then from there, he introduced me to a wide variety of people, starting with the UMKC Entrepreneurial School. I went through the Kauffman Foundation, the Fast Track Program. I worked with Digital Sandbox and Summer in the Sand, and then finally with the I worked with the Kansas City Spark Lab. I was in this 2015 class, one of the 10 programs that was chosen for that. We got seed money, which we're using for our prototype. And as I mentioned, Steve Pope with the Artifact, that it's actually been building our final prototype.
We've been doing this series of interviews called Innovation KC here at KCUR, and one of the things I've heard a lot is that Kansas City is a good place to start up new things. It sounds like you've taken advantage of a number of those institutions around Kansas City that are focused on really exactly this.
Oh, I have. It's been tremendous. And again, when I started, that's why I said I wasn't very smart. I spent 3 years on my own, and I wish I would have known about this earlier, because I'd be a lot further along than what I am. But I've taken full advantage of every opportunity and the networking that's available. I just had no idea when I first started this.
What's been the harder part, the technological design part or the starting a business part?
Probably starting the business, because I had a rough idea of the three technologies that I wanted to use. We were able to do proof of concept with those early on with the CAPS program. And then once I got to Steve at Artifact, then he's been able to expand that. But the actual starting business, getting people to believe in what you're doing, a big part of that was when I received a couple weeks ago notice that my patent had finally gone through. So that's come to fruition. And so now people are starting to, so to speak, jump on the bandwagon, which I'm all for that. Doesn't bother me at all. But being able to get the capital, because it's very, very expensive to develop a prototype and start a business.
How hard was it to get a patent approved?
It was about a 3-year process, but amazingly, it went through, and this is kind of a unique story because it was just dumb luck, but we used Hush Blackwell here in Kansas City, and without me knowing, that was the same firm that had got Jim's patent back in 1987, and one of the lawyers that's working on it in the review part of it worked on Jim's original. And it went through the first time. Bob Bowman, the lead IP lawyer on it, said that he cautioned me that it would take probably 2 or 3 attempts, and it went through in the first attempt. So they just did a tremendous job.
That's great. Are you the only person developing new technology for this purpose, or do other people take a crack at this from time to time?
No, there's been other people that have taken a crack at it, and there's other systems out there. But the NFL, what I found in my study or research, is that they want to maintain the down marker and chain system. They think that that's important to the fabric and tradition of the games. And so many of these other things are like Star Wars, laser beams going across the field, and where you don't, a chainless system, and they don't want that. So if you can, their thought was, from what they've told me, is as long as you can upgrade but still maintain, then we're interested. And that's what I've attempted to do. Plus, it doesn't cost any retrofitting. Some of these others, you have to retrofit a field at a cost of $250,000 or more. And mine, the NFL down to Jones Junior High, is going to be able to afford this piece of equipment.
Say more about how the NFL would not want to use this more advanced, more precise technology. How is that part of the tradition of the game, imprecision, important to the NFL?
They think that the human element, they think that there's drama, you know, when you take the chains out to measure and do those things. And if you look at the owners in the NFL, it's all old school. They're old families. The money's been passed down. Whereas you look at the NBA and everything, you have Mark Cubans, you have the new contemporary type people where, you know, there's still Halas family members, you know, with Chicago Bears, and there's still Lombardis, you know, involved in football. And so football is really about tradition, and they want to maintain that. But they do want to upgrade the technology, and this is something that from the feedback that I've gotten from the people, my contacts in the NFL, as long as I can get this final working prototype, they think that it can be a home run.
So getting to that prototype stage takes money. I imagine you've spent some of your own money.
Yes. more than I would like to admit.
Well, I mean, can I ask how much you've spent?
It's a little north of $20,000 of my own right now. Yes.
So you've gone to look for other capital.
Yes.
And how do you go about that?
Well, that was what I didn't know. And by going through all of these different programs and everything, like the Spark Lab, like the Kauffman Fast Track Foundation, all of these things, Digital Sandbox, and where I found that through the networking that there's money available. You know, with Spark Lab, they own a 6% portion of my company for $18,000 seed money. And so, but they've helped me network in other ways in getting it. You know, I've applied again to Digital Sandbox. I had a presentation last week. I'm hopeful for that. I've applied to KC Launch. I'm supposed to find out at the end of this week, you know, whether that goes through or not. I've made, it's gone from over 500 to 300. I'm in the top 100 right now, but I need to get in the top 10 to be able to take advantage of that. But that's $50,000 $100,000 of seed money that you can use where they take no equity. So there's money out there. You just have to know where to go.
And it doesn't come out of your wallet.
That's correct.
So how far are you from that working prototype? How much more time is this going to take?
I can see light at the end of the tunnel. It's probably about 3 months, out. And so it's there. But I've been working on this entire process. Has taken me a little over 8 years, and I had no idea. I knew it was going to, it wasn't going to be a sprint, but I was thinking, oh, I can do this in 2 or 3 years, and here I am 8-plus years later still working on it. But I'm so far into it, I can't pull out.
I'm thinking that as a football coach, you call a play, and then you see whether it worked or not. Here you're talking about a matter of many years from the time you start investing in something to even having a prototype, much less manufacturing a product and having your first sale. How does that work for you to wait that long to know whether something's going to pay off?
Well, football teaches you patience. You have to have, because when you're trying to build a program, just not win in one particular year, to be able to build a program, it takes a long period of time. And so it's just innately part of being a football coach, the patience part of it. And some days, I want it, I wanted it yesterday, that type of thing. It occurs to you, it kind of takes over, but you have to look at the big picture. And when you look at the big picture, and that's what I liken it to, that I'm trying to build a program, just not a one-time thing. I'm trying to grow this.
How, and maybe this is a little premature to ask this question, but how will you market it? How will you get the word out to Allen Junior High School in Puyallup, Washington, and every high school and college in America that, hey, we've got a new way for you to keep track of the ball placement?
Well, one of the best things that I've been told early on is that my business plan is unique, but they see a lot of potential in it. And what we're going to try to do is, I have main contacts within the NFL that have told me once I get this final working prototype, they'll go to work and get me before the NFL competition committee. And that's exactly what Jim did, almost 30 years ago, and able to do that. So I have 4 people there. Then I'm going to utilize wholesale, like a Gilman or a Wilson, for example, wholesale. And then there are 3 buying groups in all of the athletic dealers in America. And so I'll get them to do the team sales. And then we will handle in-house the NFL and college, which is about 700 schools. And the other 17,000 programs will be handled by either the wholesale or the team sales. So I don't have to have a huge sales force, big marketing, or anything else. And if we get with the NFL, then that gives us our instant brand recognition from day one, where we're able to sell nationally from the first day.
It seems like this is an unusual marketing plan, to start with the biggest possible client and then count on others to follow.
Sure. And that's exactly what happened to Jim. And he did it by accident, because he wasn't really trying to do it. But he went, I'll quickly make a long story short.
Yeah,
but
this is Jim Eggender, the founder of Dial-A-Down.
And when he sold one of his main client at Jerry's Sports Shop at the time was Kansas City Chiefs. When he invented this, he went out to Arrowhead and said, hey, I'd like to look at this from the press box and see what it looks like. And so he went out there, and the equipment guy with the Chiefs at the time said, man, this is a great idea. Wayne Rudy, that was an NFL official and also a part-time salesman for Wilson Sporting Goods, was also out there. He saw it. So the two of them went to Pete Rozelle in the NFL and said, man, you got to see this thing. And so, he took it up there. When he took his prototype up there, though, the only 2 numbers that worked on it were first and second down. The 3 and 4, they hadn't figured out how to do. And so he was just sweating bullets, and he just kept flipping 1 and 2, 1 and 2, and hoping that they didn't ask for 3 and 4.
And hoping they figured that out eventually.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you're friends with Jim Eggender, right?
Sure.
How does he feel about the fact that his dominant technology might be about to be surpassed?
He's been great about it. He's really helped me with he's probably told me more what not to do than what to do, because he made a lot of mistakes, he freely admits. And he says, don't do this, 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 and this. And he says, you're more advanced, you know, than what I was at the time. So he says, you're going to do okay on that end of it. Just don't make these mistakes and you'll have a shortcut. So I kind of had the blueprint to it.
It's good to have someone like that in your
corner. Yes, it is. He's been very helpful.
Well, Mike Foster is the creator of LaserDown, coming perhaps to a football field near you within a few years. Thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Brian. I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you.
It's time for us to take a break. When we return to Central Standard, are you thinking of downsizing? I mean, really downsizing? We'll talk to the leader of a movement here in Kansas City that's building and promoting smaller, much smaller houses, about what it could mean for affordability and efficiency and a different way to live. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us.